Lights, camera, action.
When a script is written that is so bad, no one will film it. These brave podcasters will bring it to life just so they can mock it. This is Table Reads.
So the movie's a kaput, which means your script ain't worth the buffalo shit on a nickel.
Table Reads with Sean McBee, Jeff Lewis, and Joshua Baker.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Corona Reads. We are here. I'm Sean. That's Josh and Jeff on those other screens, wherever those are.
Here I am. We rebranded
Corona Reads.
I just want to give everybody the heads up right at the top of every episode that we're doing like this, that it's not our fault.
In these troubling times, in these difficult times, buy a Toyota.
It's important to have a scapegoat. And since I don't like to edit or put in extra effort to make sure the podcast sounds super great, I just, blame the coronavirus. We've all got a huge get out of jail free card right now, so I'm using it.
That works good.
Yeah.
But we have to stay inside the jail.
That's true. Jail in place. It feels like a very fancy jail right now.
This is what white collar crime feels like.
Like, oh, Netflix, a full kitchen.
Yeah, except you still need to pay your bills. Those guys, they're just like getting brought their caviar.
I miss caviar. Back when we were Table Reads.
Back when we were Table Reads. Caviar, champagne.
Those were the days, weren't they? So this is part 5 of Sam Hamm's Watchmen. Do you guys think we're gonna finish up next week?
We're in the 70s, right?
Yeah, 76 of 113. I hope so, because I only made 6 graphics. Like graphics for 6 episodes worth.
I'm gonna start reading really slow.
Let's just bang on it real hard. You could just repeat a graphic, nobody will notice.
Probably not.
But you should make it noticeable.
Or we can just invert the colors.
That's the joke.
Previously on Table Reads.
So after a fairly Manhattan-centric episode, we got a Manhattan-free episode that focused on the real reason we're all here. Rorschach. After being captured by the CTU, Rorschach is locked up with all the requisite face-smashing. While he's under lock and key, we learn his early origins in the most cinematic way imaginable. They're read to us as bullet points by an overweight psychiatrist. Meanwhile, Dan can't get it up, until Laurie is scared by an assassination attempt on Adrian Veidt. Then, rock hard! When we return to Rorschach, we're given a better look at the moment that Rorschach went full psycho.
Fade in.
Dissolve 2. Alright, we're on where it says Dissolve 2.
Yes, sir.
Exterior, barn, toward dusk. A rural tree-lined area outside the city. A compact bubble car pulls up outside a big ramshackle barn and stops. Dreeberg gets out, goes to the padlocked doors, fumbles in his pocket for a key. After a moment, Laurie wanders up beside him.
Enough is enough, Daniel. Exactly where are we?
Memory Lane. He opens the padlock, ushers Laurie inside. Interior barn, a moment later. Inside the barn is a huge oblong shape, covered with a tarpaulin.
Daniel.
Give me a hand with the tarp, would you? You take that side. She goes around and bends to unfasten the tarp. The two of them pull it back to reveal the Owl Ship.
Hoot, hoot.
Again with the unsurprising reveals.
She goes up to the owl-shaped tarp.
How could you find, how would you know it's owl-shaped?
I guess, what if it had the ears poking up straight up? It's like, is there a bat under this? No.
It's draped over the front, and you just see, like, the two perfect circles where the portholes are for the eyes.
Right.
I want to read his Batman script now, because you remember in Batman, you have that, like, suit-up sequence where, yeah, like, the glove goes on, the other glove goes on, the boot comes up, you see the bat symbol on his chest.
Bat nipple.
So I wonder if he wrote all that out, like, a bat-shaped cape and a bat-shaped gauntlet and the bat symbol, and then, like, has him in the shadows, and then says... Reveal Batman! All his reveals are not reveals at all.
Have you seen this new clown in town? He makes a lot of jokes.
Oh, who could that be? I wonder who this president could be.
Al Pacino.
More table reads lore.
Yeah.
The Owl Ship, Night Owl's high-tech hovercraft. It's a bit tarnished from years of disuse, but it's still an impressive sight. Dreeberg stands back to admire it. An impressed Lori wanders around to join him, wearing an ear-to-ear grin.
The Owl Ship? I can't believe it.
I thought it was time for a routine maintenance check. Interior, the Owl Ship, that moment. The two of them enter. Dreeberg sits at the controls and turns the electrical systems, while Lori wanders through the cabin, reliving days gone by.
I wish that there was, like, Hallelujah playing, like, super soft, and then when he opens the door, it gets louder. Like, he just has it playing in there.
Like, on repeat.
Right.
It's using the auxiliary batteries to just run Hallelujah on repeat. Because this motherfucker prepares.
He's like, I'm going to get laid one day.
Got little owl condoms.
Yeah. Wow. This brings back some memories. Does it still fly?
Only if you're crying, baby.
I took her out a couple of summers back. Scared the hell out of some cows. I wonder if she'd make it down to Antarctica.
Antarctica?
Adrian's headed down to his secret retreat. He invited us to come along. I've been thinking, if things do get nasty, it wouldn't be a bad place to sit out a war.
Would you want to sit out a war? I mean, what would be left?
You and me, baby. You and me. You and me. He looks directly at her. Suddenly uncomfortable, she averts her gaze, gets up, and begins rummaging around in the back of the cabin. Dreeberg turns back to the control panel, feeling subtly rejected. Yeah, you're right. Probably wouldn't make it down there anyway. Behind him, Lori lets out a little squeal of delight. She's just opened a compartment door. Inside it are a handful of gaudy costumes. They're old superhero togs.
Dan, the spare costumes? I can't believe you kept them.
Me neither. Definitely not for sex reasons. just storage. Yeah.
Why is mine all sticky?
Storage.
The sticky specter.
I don't remember taking any bullets to the crotch area. Why is there holes?
It's actually on a doll.
Right.
I don't remember having my mouth open in a perpetual O like this. Me neither. Mine barely even fits.
in the cock area.
The thing is, I try to remember why we did it, and I can't. Helping people, or righting wrongs, or trying to save the world? I don't know. It all seems so abstract. Lori's holding her old costume up against her shoulders, eyeing herself in a small mirror above a sink.
God, you sound like John. Turn around.
What are you up to?
Don't look. Turn around.
Smirking, he complies. Lori begins to undress in the back of the cabin. Hold on. 2 hours ago, I was trying harder than anything to fuck your brains out. Now, I do not want you to see my tits.
He missed a chance,
man. Not that. It's about the surprise, dude.
She was also drunk.
That's yeah, true.
Plausible deniability. If she's drunk, she can't be like, you're a slut. Yeah. I'm not a slut.
I'm not a slut. I was inebriated.
Yeah. I need permission from Mr. Jack Daniels.
No.
He's the headmaster at my all-girls school.
Oh, my God.
Who's the janitor? Mr. Boston.
Take you on this Al school bus.
Smirking, he complies. Lori begins to undress in the back of the cabin. This better not be what I think it is.
Okay.
Dreeberg turns around. Lori's in full costume, looking quite imposing and, in a perverse way, quite beautiful. She's dressed as an owl.
It's just a really big owl carcass.
He put the wrong one on. She put the wrong one. Yeah. It's Dr. Manette's thumb.
Now you put I'm on the silk specter, Dan.
You be Rorschach. It smells like beans.
You're in here with me.
This is way better.
I like the fucked up kinky version of Watchmen. Like, I mean, they're already kind of fucked up and kinky, but it's better this way. Like,
Dreeberg turns around. Lori's in full costume, looking quite imposing and, in a perverse way, quite beautiful. He feigns shock. My God, it's the Silk Spectre, scourge of the underworld, defender of the weak.
In the flesh.
Flesh. She ambles over to the control panel, embraces Dreiberg from behind, and strokes his thinning hair.
Poor Daniel. You really miss it all, don't you?
Saving the world? I guess I do. Maybe we can still save ourselves. She's reliving hero days, and he's like, maybe we can save ourselves. That's sexy, Jeez. Right? Maybe right. We can run away from he's danger.
Like, he's fucking super horny. She's just legit just like having these memories of when they saved the world and did something so fucking big. And then he's like, yeah, but like,
we can fuck.
So we can fuck. And she's like, look at this. And he's like, yeah, that's cool. We can save ourselves from this horny feeling we're both definitely having.
You know, baby, running away is my middle name.
You know, there's two people on this owl ship that are horny without boners.
Dissolve 2. Exterior. South Street Seaport, dusk. A massive peace rally downtown. Thousands of citizens have turned out. Placards and protest signs are everywhere. Each remark is met by cheers and chants, by raucous boos as well. And while the crowd is split between pacifists and hawks, they're all frightened as hell. Things are much the same in London, Berlin, possibly even Moscow. The end is nigh. And passions flare. It's anarchy waiting to happen.
You know what the Joint Chiefs of Staff are doing right now? They're sitting in the Pentagon talking about a first strike. That's right, a first strike.
You think the Reds ain't doing the same thing?
Then for the love of God, let's negotiate. We could start a war, but we can't stop it.
It's pinko simps like you that drove Dr. Manhattan to Mars.
Dr. Manhattan was an inhuman fascist.
It's God's judgment. Jesus is the way.
A heckler fights his way on stage and lunges for the microphone. This is all you, Jeff.
Russia has just been waiting for an opening. They won't show us no mercy. I say nuke them now.
You think this is some kind of grudge match? We're talking the end of the world.
The two of them grapple at the mic, and the heckler falls off the stage. On cue, the crowd erupts. Fights break out. Cops start swinging. rifle butts. Stop. Cops start swinging rifle butts.
Cops start swinging butts.
They don't know. They don't know how to use the guns. They gave us these new billy clubs.
As pro-nukers swarm the stage, our gaze turns upward. A trio of hovercraft hangs in the air above the seaport. Their undersides, outfitted with heavy artillery on turrets, bear the initials CTU. Interior, CTU hovercraft. That moment, dusk. CTU men watch the nascent riot through the plexiglass canopy.
I've had it with these a-holes. Drop the gas.
Exterior seaport, that moment, dusk. I was just picturing Batman on roof going, too late!
Give me that bomb!
Panic among the crowds as tear gas canisters explode in their midst. The CTU ships descend ever closer to the ground. Here, I'll do this one.
Cease and desist at once! We will not hesitate to use force.
A couple of cops go down in the melee. Rioters grab their rifles, turn them on the CTU ships overhead. Others in the crowd fling rocks, brickbats, whatever's handy. Hysteria rules. Hey guys, what's a brickbat?
I don't know, I'm Googling it.
Yeah, please Google that.
Yeah, Google the shit out of that.
I need to know what brick bat is.
A piece of brick, typically when used as a weapon.
So it's a brick. It's a brick with velocity.
It's a brick bat.
It's not a brick at rest.
Gotcha. Okay. And if
another brick in the wall.
If you eat a brick bat, do you get brick coronavirus?
Oh,
Rick Rona. Wow, we've got that's not good.
It's used ironically to highlight how terrible my joke was.
I like how you used it ironically.
It's probably my favorite.
What's a brick bat?
Cut to interior barn, dusk. Dreeberg walks around to the front of the owl ship with a toolkit, wiping his hands on an oily rag.
Gross.
He calls inside to Lori. Guess that ought to do it. Let's shut her down. Lori? No reply. Curious, he climbs aboard. Interior, owl ship, that moment. Lori's standing by the monitor over the instrument console. Her face is distraught, agonized.
Daniel, you ought to take a look at this.
On screen, it's total screaming chaos. Cannons on the bellies of the CTU hovercraft swivel randomly, spitting automatic fire at the mobs below. What the hell?
It's a peace rally. The CTU just opened fire on the crowd.
Oh, Lori. Jesus. No. He turns away, paralyzed with horror. Lori watches, awestruck.
They're just mowing them down. This is it. This is the end of the world. This is what it looks like.
Camera moves in close on Dryberg's stricken face as we cut to flashback processed footage. We're back in slow-mo sepia land, the golden age of superheroes. The owl ship emerges from a fog bank and rises majestically into frame, like the 7th Cavalry arriving to save the day. 7th Cavalry, huh?
Oh man, huh?
As it draws closer, the Perspex canopy coming into view, we can just make out Night Owl at the helm, with Silk Spectre riding shotgun. There's a frenzied mob below, racing right and left, their aimless motions stylized and surreal. They're beset by a sudden...
What the fuck? For everybody who's listening to this, Sean is fucking dancing in a stylized, unreal way.
Yeah.
Coming for you, crime!
They're beset by a sudden windstorm as the owl ship's powerful blowers clear the tear gas from this fantasy equivalent of the Seaport Plaza. Faces turn skyward, fingers point, and suddenly, the footage we're watching undergoes a subtle transformation. Colors bleed in, sound comes up, the pace of the action quickens, and when we cut back to the ship overhead, we're in full color and real time. Aerial shot on Owl Ship. Because the Owl Ship is really there, and
hey,
by...
dude.
How what?
I gotta stop you for a second. My fucking Audacity stopped working.
Oh no!
Are you recording this feed or nah?
I am.
Okay. It just crashed on me.
Okay, so I'm just going to have to use the Skype channel?
You'll have to use the Skype channel. I just restarted it, but it's at like 23 minutes, so.
Okay. Did you lose what you had, or does it automatically save that file?
I just started up and it's gone. Nothing came out of it.
Excellent.
So you'll have to use Skype for the first half and then Josh's good shit for the second half.
Yes. And do you know who is to blame?
Corona.
Corona!
I just had a hard blue screen of death, like, while we were taking a break, too, so...
I saw that text.
My computer's very... Yeah, it's
because
fucked up right now.
Windows catches the coronavirus along with every other virus.
It's true.
It's those 5G towers.
Don't...
Sorry even... to fuck up your flow, man.
Yeah, you're fucking up my flow.
My flow has been fucked. Unlike Drawberg's soft dick.
I was gonna push it in there.
You know, it's funny that he can't get it up, but yet the man who cares nothing about the world or his earthly pleasures got 3 erections at the beginning of this.
I mean, he can manipulate matter with his mind, man.
Dick be hard.
So Dan was unable to get it up because it's been a while, and he's nervous. Lori, meanwhile, was ravenous for the dick because she was getting him 2-3 at a time. It's been like 4 hours since she got laid. Come
on.
She
just wanted her one regular dick, not 4 blue dicks.
You don't even taste like a battery.
This doesn't tingle at all. Go get that tingly shit.
You got regular non-alkaline dick. Oh my God.
I need that nuclear dick.
I need that lithium dick.
Tape a 9-volt battery to your dick, then let me suck it.
I was thinking about like the kinky version of this. It is like instead of Dr. Manhattan, it could be Dr. Woe Manhattan, and instead of a it's a bitch, it's a lady, and she got so she got like little blue nipples and a big giant like 2-story blue vag,
or she still gives herself a dick.
Because why not?
Even better transgender with a huge blue dick and titties. Just vaporizing people in Vietnam.
I wonder if it's gonna hit hard enough on the fact that like the funny part about the fact that he couldn't get it up is because he had that fear and was nervous. Like the idea that Batman couldn't get it up in like a regular situation, like to prove out, because Night Owl was Batman,
right?
But like
he's actually based on cool Blue Beetle.
Night Owl was,
yeah.
Oh, in your face, bitch! Rorschach's Batman.
Yeah, they Rorschach. Were all based on Charleston characters, and that was the original thing. Dr. Manhattan was Captain Atom. Rorschach was the Question. Night Owl was Blue Beetle. And then DC, there are a couple other ones for Ozymandias and Silk Spectre that are like real deep cuts, and I can't remember their names. But sure. The original plan was to use those characters because DC was licensing them from Charleston or had just bought them. And then DC was like, you know what? We want to put these characters in our books properly. So... don't use them.
But just, I mean, I'm guessing that's where this is going to go, but instead of the prison outbreak, they'll just stop, they'll kill some peaceful protesters and or the police.
Yeah, either way, at the end of this, someone's going to be hard.
Yeah!
Hopefully.
It's me.
I've got the owl suit all ready to go.
Leonard Cohen queued up. Woo-hoo.
Because the owl ship is really there. And by God, the Watchmen are back in action a quarter mile above the South Street Seaport.
By God.
It says that in the directions. It says, by God.
I saw them. He's just talking to himself at this point.
Interior. He's like, nobody's going to fucking read this.
Yeah. And I'll be goddamn if that bitch didn't pick up the vacuum cleaner. I'm trying to write. Like, he's just typing at it.
Interior. Owl ship. That moment. The three CTU ships are now visible through the cockpit dome. Okay, Lori, let's see if we've still got what it takes. That's his superhero voice. He's putting on the deepest voice he can.
Hopefully, if I got what it takes.
On the panel, a computer targeting device homes in on the on a CTU ship. Interior, CTU hovercraft. That moment, a radar man stares at his console in puzzlement.
Sir, we've got an odd blip off starboard.
The ship rocks violently as a sudden explosion. Aerial shot on CTU hovercraft blows the cannon mount cleanly off its underside. The ruptured ship wobbles, trying to right itself, but to no avail. Jets sputtering, it lurches toward the harbor and slaps down hard against the water. Angle on crowd, pointing at the skies in disbelief.
Look up there!
Oh my god, it's...
How long was this CTU ship bombing these fucking citizens that it got to the news? They saw it on the news.
Right.
And then they flew there and they're just still fucking going.
I'll give you a hint. They had to bus in more protesters.
Second wave of protesters, go.
Get them in here. Get them in here.
I think they're finally listening to reason. They're almost out of unreasonable bombs.
The unreasonable bomb.
See if stepping over the dead bodies of all their predecessors yes. Gives welcome them any pause. Oh, well, what? The protesters' union must have like real strong membership.
They're just very good like at being tactically minded, oddly enough, for peaceful protesters. Nah, they're gonna bomb that first wave.
Though, how does a protesters' union picket their job?
Oh, what if they think that the protesting union is corrupt?
Well, like, yeah, if the protesting union is if whatever you wherever your protest place is, and you're in the protesting union, and you want to go on strike, you can't, because striking is protesting, and protesting makes you a scab if you're on strike.
This is for the audience that's on the meta level of this episode. Sean just wrapped this scene into the whole crux of the story of who watches the Watchmen, but he did it with a fictional protesting organization. He's like, what if the protesters become corrupt? How do you protest? The Watchmen was created because the cops were corrupt, but who watches the people who were watching those?
Who scabs the scabs?
I love that Sean brought it around with a bit. That's fucking art, dude.
It's just like Inception levels of Watchmen. Right. Interior owl ship on Dryburgh. He barks into a microphone. Sorry, he barks into a microphone. Attention, bark. CTU! What were we saying?
Nothing.
Attention, CTU! Cease fire immediately! Exterior seaport, that moment, dusk, ground level. From the midst of the bewildered crowd, we watch as the owl ship and the CTU talk some serious trash.
or we'll blow your asses out of the sky.
Unregistered craft, identify yourself.
Baby, we're a blast from the past. Oh, I instantly regret saying that.
You did so good with the speaker like that.
That's what it should say, is maybe we're a blast from the past. Oh, I instantly regret saying that. That should be the line.
They didn't cut it off? Like, damn, that was stupid.
Yeah. Whoops.
The crowd's in a frenzy. Most of them are taking it... Wait, what? Most of them are taking it on the lam. I thought that said 1 a.m. That's why I was confused. But a dozen hardy souls are standing stock still, transfixed by the strange sight overhead. Someone read this line. I'm not doing it.
It's the Watchman.
Excitement ripples through the crowd as the CTU ships bob in the air, clumsily turning to face their attacker. Soon, the ships are hanging immobile in midair, squaring off face to face. A Wild West showdown, except not at all. On the prows of all three craft, missile launchers rotate into position. Interior, Owl Ship. That moment, Dryberg with his hand poised on the throttle. We're gonna have to shave this one close. Lori's like, on it.
I'm doing it already. Dead. Stop moving the ship.
Already did.
An instant before the CTU rockets fire, Dryberg shoves the throttle full forward. Aerial shot on Owl Ship. With a burst of flame, the Owl Ship blasts off. The two rockets converge on the point where the Owl Ship was hovering a millisecond before and collide. Boom. The Owl Ship, meanwhile, hurtles forward, slicing directly between the two CTU ships. The crowd cheers. I really need some cheering on my soundboard.
Yay.
Yeah, wow.
The Monty Python one.
As they're holding their friends in their arms dying, it's like, yay! The Watchman saved some of us.
Has anyone seen my leg? Oh, Jesus. This line. I feel like it's a typo. Like, it must mean Lori. Dryberg rides the joystick.
Nice.
Lori watches a monitor showing the aft view from the ship.
They're following us.
All right. Mission accomplished. He's no sooner said it than machine gun fire peppers the rear of the ship. He arcs hard left and drops, taking evasive action. Exterior. World Trade Center. Night. The Owl Ship streaks between the Twin Towers. A second later, the CTU ships rip past on either side.
What's happening here? It's a very sensitive subject. Tread lightly there, movie.
We would like to remind you that this movie was written in 1989.
They fly right past the CDC.
Oh, no. COVID-89.
Exterior street, night. Astonished pedestrians gape at the bizarre dogfight above them. Dogfight? Have you seen two blimps in a dogfight before? I don't know if you can call that a dogfight.
I don't know what an evasive maneuver looks like in a blimp. The Hindenburg, maybe, I guess. I don't know.
Take a best evasive action. Pop.
Pop.
The Owl Ship doglegs around a darkened office building. A CTU missile blows a hole in its facade. Aerial shot on Owl Ship, firing two missiles afterward at the pursuing craft. Interior Owl Ship, that moment, Dryberg exhilarated, Lori worried, checking the radar readout.
Missed him, Dan. You're aiming high.
I don't want to take him out. Just want to keep them interested.
They're practically on us.
That Detroit shit? I'm so worried. He punches a button on the dash. It's labeled Turbo.
What does that do?
It's the way that she likes it.
Yeah. Not when I kick it into turbo drive.
This turns on the third fan. Aerial shot on airship. The turbojets kick in and the owl ship accelerates to 400 miles per hour, leaving the CTU craft in the dust. Well, the owl ship isn't actually a Zeppelin.
It disintegrates into pieces.
Yeah, but 400 miles per hour. And they were just in a dogfight. Where's he going? He's leaving.
He's bringing
just
them away.
Just keeping them interested. Now that they're 25 feet away from the people they were murdering, we can safely assume that they'll just follow us for however long. Like, they're Pepe Le Pew. Just, they're not in a hurry. They're just going to cruise behind us at 6 miles an hour as we zoom off into the horizon.
Yeah, it's like, I need to drag him away from the site and keep him interested in it. She's like, they're closing in on us, Dan. He's like, well, I ain't no pussy. And he fucking hits the turbo button. They ain't catching me, goddammit. It's like, you're forgetting the reason that you were coming out here.
Running away is my middle name.
They'll never catch us. It's like, no, the point was to catch us.
Exterior Holland Tunnel, night. A line of traffic enters the tunnel. The owl ship swoops suddenly and, just clearing the arch, enters above them. A moment later, the lead CTU ship tries to follow. Bad move. How? These are basically blimps.
Did he try and go? Because he obviously couldn't go 400 miles per hour. He was just like,
how is it
like,
anywhere near them?
It can't be.
The less maneuverable craft rams into the lip of the arch and explodes.
Oh, the humanity!
The second CTU ship hurtles toward a similar fate. But at the last moment, retro jets blasting at full force, it manages to stop itself. It backs up slightly, edges up over the tunnel, and settles for the airborne route. Interior, Holland Tunnel, a moment later. The owl ship zooms through the tunnel, mere feet above the tops of the cars. Horns honk, brakes screech. There's an oversized truck directly in its path. The owl ship nudges up slightly and clears the truck by inches, throwing off sparks against the roof of the tunnel. Interior, owl ship, that moment. The end of the tunnel is coming up fast. Fog blowers on. Activate radar shields. Exterior, Holland.
He's threading a fucking tunnel at 400 miles per hour? What the
fuck? That'll get his dick hard.
Your margin of error is so low.
Also, I think part of him is like, God damn it, I'm going to ram some fucking tunnel tonight.
Oh, I need to go in reverse. Nope, back in. I feel like whoever wrote this just wrote a number. He's like, 400 is pretty fucking fast. I'm just going to put that there, not really knowing how fast 400 miles per hour is.
That seems right.
He's faster than my car.
That actually reminds me, I worked at a film festival years back, and we had Patrick Stewart as a guest, and he did a little talking with the audience, and someone asked him some Star Trek question, of course, because fucking nerds. And he goes, you know, I've never had much interest in sci-fi, and I couldn't even tell you what I was saying most of the time. I don't even know what warp speed is. I only know you can't do it on the highway.
I feel like Gene Roddenberry wrote that line for him, and he's just been holding on to it.
Yeah.
Since then, he's like, I'm just going to say this for the next, until I die.
Engage.
I've been holding on to this line, saving it, savoring it, just for the Sarasota Film Festival.
True thespians will understand my humor.
That's pretty fucking cool, though. Like, I love Patrick Stewart, man.
Peace, who's the greatest?
I would love to just meet him and mention everything but Star Trek. And then when somebody asks a question, like, why you ask him that? Just pretend you didn't know he's from Star Trek. Be like,
you were in Star Trek?
This is Patrick Stewart from the Green Room.
So I actually did that to William H. Macy at that same film festival. I was talking to him, and all these people kept coming up and, like, saying how much they loved his latest movie, whatever. And after, like, the fifth person walked away, you know, saying how great that one movie was, I was like, yo, man, you were great in Enter the Dragon.
You were the bomb in Phantoms, yo.
You were the best cuck in Boogie Nights that I've ever met. Did you really kill yourself in that movie?
Also, how are your kids doing in school, by the way? That's real topical. I don't know where we are, dudes.
We're in the, 181.
Oh, right at the top of the page.
Yeah.
The owl ship emerges from the tunnel and noses upward at an almost vertical angle, spewing dense clouds of billowing fog in its wake. A few seconds later, the lone remaining CTU ship arrives. But seeing only fog and no trace of the owl ship, it pushes forward on a horizontal course and disappears into the darkness beyond the water. Interior, owl ship. A moment later, night. They're in the middle of a cloud bank. Dreeberg is wearing a look of intense satisfaction as Lori nervously checks the radar. Lori.
We lost him.
He flashes her a smug little smile. Laughing uncontrollably, she shakes her head and buries her face in her hands.
Oh, Daniel, we're in deep shit now.
Table Reads will return after this brief word from our sponsors.
What's up, docs and docettes? Trevor Thompson, the self-appointed Looney Tunes critic here, and if you like old cartoons and watching online reviewers dissect them, then you probably said the same thing I did about 2 years ago. Hey, what the fuck?
Here, watch your language, you bud.
Every Saturday morning, I do a brand new commentary of a Warner Brothers short. All throughout the month, I do video essays examining the history of these cartoons. Catch my videos on youtube.com/FerrisWheelhouse2, or just use the hashtag Looney Tunes Critic. And now, here's Eric Bauza, the new voice of Bugs Bunny.
You've been listening to the Looney Tunes Critic. Ain't he a stinker?
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lights, camera, action.
So the movie's kaput, which means your script ain't worth the buffalo shit on a nickel.
Now, back to Table Reads.
Guys, you don't want to know what we talk about on the break.
It's harmless fun. Pool noodles.
Pool noodles, yeah.
Pool noodles are important.
You can do with a pool noodle.
Whether you're a man or a woman.
Or a woman.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I am flagging. I want to power through this, so let's get back in there.
Here we go.
Fade in.
Interior. Prison mess hall, night. The usual assortment of jailbirds lined up with trays in the serving line. A prison trustee in hospital orderly whites enters the hall and falls in line at the end of the line. Falls in at the end of the line. I invented a line. He nudges the con in front of him.
Just left the infirmary. Lost Otis about 20 minutes ago.
The con nods and whispers to the man in front of him. The news goes through the serving line like wildfire. Within a matter of seconds, it's reached the jailbird at the front of the line. A Hulk named T-Bone. I really want T-Bone to go, what? There's biscuits in the toilets? What? Because, like, you know, phone line.
I'm glad you
I love Jeff's face. It. He's like, what the fuck is he talking about?
I'm glad he walked me through it. I wouldn't want to say anything. I was like, go on.
That's good.
I mean, I'll do whatever you want, boss. Like,
you know, like, have you guys seen Johnny Dangerously?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, my God. It's an airplane-style movie, but set in, like, the 1930s. It's like a gangster airplane, like, Zucker spoofy movie with Michael Keaton, and it's hilarious, and you should watch it. And that's all. Also, Joe Piscopo.
Nice plug. Getting that Keaton money.
This podcast sponsored by Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton would like you to know he is still around.
I'm still here and I'm still healthy. Wait, is this... just Otis went down.
T-Bone nods and carries his tray to a nearby table, where a cadre of six enormous thugs are munching away. Presiding over them is the biggest man in the pen, who happens, ironically, to be a midget. Little Bigger. His name is Little Bigger?
Yeah. Just heard, boss. Otis bought it.
Fucking Rorschach. This joint goes up. Tonight. Exterior. I figured it was appropriate that I play the midget.
No, it's... You, what?
Well, wait, listen, look, what could you be referring to? We never noticed anything.
Is this another telephone game thing?
I let Jeff play T-Bone.
I'm like, I ain't no fucking T-Bone. Give me the newscaster.
It's me, T-Bone.
Hey, it's me, T-Bone.
Hey, wait, hold on. I want the biscuits in the toilet.
Exterior aerial shot on owl ship, night, drifting lazily through a cloud bank. The blunt prow of the owl ship emerges gradually from a shroud of fog and catches a shaft of pale blue moonlight. Interior owl ship, that moment, night. Through the cockpit window, the distant city skyline glimmers, then disappears again behind wisps of clouds. We're taking a dreamy tour of the stratosphere, slow and elegant. Somewhere, Billie Holiday is singing, I can show you the world. You're my thrill.
Oh.
Instruments blink and peep on the panel. No one's at the controls. The ship lurches. A wine bottle tips and rolls noisily across the width of the cabin floor. A woman's hand reaches for it, sets it right. It's Lori, who's midway through a two-minute kiss with Dryberg. The pair of them are locking in a tight, post-coital embrace on the cabin floor, their clothing in heaps around them.
Better. Much better.
Dryberg starts to say something, settles back with a serene smile instead.
I bet I know what made the difference this time.
What?
The costumes. Am I right?
Dryberg seems mildly shocked by the proposition. Then, despite himself, he starts to chortle. She pokes him playfully on the arm.
Come on, admit it.
No way. I'm not that much of a pervert.
Yes, you are.
No offense, Lori, but it was Silk Spectre I had the crush on. Tonight was the first time I felt like myself in 10 years.
That's because...
It's because I fucked you. It's because there's nothing to be afraid of anymore. The world's about to end. I feel like I could save it. He grabs his cloak, wraps it around him, and moves purposefully to the instrument panel. He throws a few switches, arcs the owl ship hard right.
You're full of yourself. What are you doing?
As long as we're on the subject of perverts, I miss Rorschach. Let's spring him.
What?
Dryberg, rejuvenated, exhilarated, smiling ear to ear, reaches for the throttle and kicks the ship into overdrive. Now, Jeff, as you read this every year, remind me, in the comic, do they fuck on the owl ship?
Yes, they do.
They do. So, can you now fill me in on why everyone was so pissed off that they fucked in the owl ship on the movie? In the movie?
Were they mad about that?
People I don't know why they were mad about that. I wasn't mad about it. I like the, I mean, I, maybe it was that it was kind of the played up pretty hard. They went a little long with the sex scene, yeah. And then the hitting the, I don't know why, but maybe they were upset that they hit the flamethrower in time with the orgasm, also in time with the chorus for Hallelujah. They might have thought it was too gimmicky or something. I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was great.
The flamethrower was a bit much. That's true.
Don't they do that in the book?
I don't think they do the flamethrower in the book. I don't remember them doing that. I don't remember it being as like comic-y and shit like that. But like, I mean, at the same time, at least it wasn't this. At least it wasn't them literally telling you why he was able to fucking get it up. Like,
yeah.
they show it and they play it. This is like, hey, you got off because you like the idea of us wearing costumes, don't you? That's something you're supposed to like read, like see through the character's actions. Not dressed up, no boner.
Let's dressed throw up, the bunker. Sub out of this subtext. You know how you do that? No one will be confused by my script.
So I'm looking at the scene right now in the book, and they're like, did the costumes make it good, Dan? Yeah, I guess the costumes had something to do with it.
Oh, so Alan Moore called it out, too.
Yeah, he calls it out right there.
Shit, I hate that. I don't remember that.
Well, I guess you need to read it again.
Yeah, read it again, bitch.
It's downstairs. I'll do that. But yeah, no, I like the fucking idea of just having it kind of more for like the violence and shit like that. I guess that's one of the things the movie kind of did a little better.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Like, why do you need to say it?
Yeah, why do you have to say it?
Whether
you
you're Alan Moore or Sam Hamm.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Oh, yeah, got that. Cut to series of shots. My favorite phrase in a script. The prison. And as Sly Stone once said, there's a riot going on. Sirens howl, and we get several quick glimpses of gleeful convicts running wild, disabling guards, overrunning cell blocks, liberating weapons, throwing food. They could have done this at any time. They just wanted an excuse, I guess? What?
Right.
There were no circumstances that allowed this to happen. They just decided. Like,
they waited for the one guy to die.
Yeah, like one day they're just like, I'm bored of being in prison. Let's not do that anymore. Throwing food. Of course, they have a food fight in the prison breakout, whatever. Dreeberg and Lori, interior owlship that moment. Dreeberg and Lori back in full costume. Dreeberg's eyes are riveted to a monitor over the controls. I think we're just a trifle late.
Jesus, Dan. Out of the frying pan.
The monitor shows a magnified view of the prison complex below them. The prisoners have taken the quad and are exchanging fire with the guards in the watchtower. It's an ugly, bloody mess. Who watches the watchtower? I know he's totally bugfuck, but he saved my life a half dozen times. Interior cell, night. Sirens blaring everywhere. Rorschach sits on his bunk, his legs drawn up before him, his eyes darting swiftly around the cell. I want him to be eating beans that we are unsure where he got them. Just sitting there eating mystery beans.
Mystery beans.
Mystery beans. That's our new superhero group.
Yeah, guys, I started a new podcast.
Welcome to Mystery Beans.
Interior, maximum security block, night. Smoke and confusion. Escaped convicts racing to and fro past sprawled, unconscious guards. In the midst of all the chaos, four menacing figures stride purposefully through the cell block. It's the psychotic midget Little Bigger with... Oh, God, really gotta watch saying that. With his three henchmen, Carlos, Rafi, and T-Bone. Wheeling an oversized electrical arc welder before them, They stop outside Rorschach's cell and grin in anticipation.
Find an outlet for this thing. Rorschach, I did 15 years because of you. It's payback time.
Rafi finds an outlet and plugs in the arc welder. They just have outlets in the hallway of prisons?
They don't have 240 volt outlets in the hallway.
Not for no fucking, arc welder.
They got a really big electrical cable they're going to plug into one end.
And bring it down from the shop.
Unplug that washing machine. I got to plug in this arc welder.
It's still not the same voltage. It takes its own particular designated breaker.
Yeah.
Whatever, that's getting too into it. Ship flies 400 miles per hour. Keep going.
Yeah.
Carlos is carrying a big, nasty meat cleaver. He slides back the panel in Rorschach's door, rattles the cleaver noisily in the frame.
See this, runt? We're going to take your puny little balls off and pickle them. Oh, I think he just wet his pants.
Hilarity all around. T-Bone shoves Carlos aside and takes his place at the panel in the door.
Let me see.
Relax, boys. Everybody gets a slice of turkey. But I get to carve. What's he doing now?
No response from T-Bone, who stands there with his face pressed tightly to the panel.
You deaf? I said, what's he...
He gives T-Bone a nudge. T-Bone's legs buckle and he topples over backwards, landing flat as a board on the floor. A soup spoon quivers ion the air, its sharpened handle buried deep in his eye socket.
Boss, Jesus!
Son of a bitch! We're coming, Rorschach. We're gonna peel you like a grape. Light the torch.
Oh, 1 second. I love the imagery of them plugging up this big fucking arc welder that's just got this huge flame. And then the guy next to him pulls out a knife. He's like, yeah, when we use this to get in there, we're going to fucking use this knife. like, he's like, come on, chop your balls off. And the guy's over there with a fucking huge flame just cutting through the bars. Yeah, I'm going to drop this.
And not to be a pedant, but I kind of want one guy to go, boss, this door is, well, I don't think we're ever getting it open now. Maybe we should have used an acetylene torch.
We just keep welding it shut, boss.
You know, this is an outbreak. We probably could have gotten some keys off a guard.
We could have just shot him through the boss.
Yeah, we just shot him.
Yeah, these unconscious guards everywhere, they got guns.
I gotten pretty good at knife throwing. I could just stand here all day and fucking throw knives at him.
Also, we're gonna peel you like a grape? Who the fuck peels their grapes?
People in prison with a lot of time.
My sister does.
Does she?
Yeah.
Josh, I have news for you that you are not gonna like. Your sister is a psychopath.
Can you confirm or deny that?
Yeah. If she does peel grapes, that is true.
Yeah, I believe it.
She's kind of cool, but then this takes it too far.
Love you, Katie.
Rafi ignites the arc welder, and the boys go to work on the lock of Rorschach's cage. Interior cell, that moment. Rorschach waiting patiently on his bunk. The metal lock on the inside of the cell door is beginning to glow a dull red. Cut 2. Interior owlship. That moment, night. Dreberg hands Lori what looks like a pair of electronic earmuffs. Okay, I'm turning on the screamers. We'll have to hit the roof running. He throws a switch on the control panel. Exterior prison complex. A moment later, night. Windows shatter in the guard towers as a wailing ultrasonic screech splits the air. On the roof of the complex, paralyzed guards drop their weapons. Escaped prisoners clutch at their burst eardrums as the owl ship descends and gently touches down. The lock is bright red and... interior, Rorschach's cell, that moment. The lock is bright red and smoking. Over on the bunk, Rorschach's face is lined with exertion. His back is wedged tight against the wall of the cell, his legs straining against the lip of his toilet. Grunting and groaning, he manages to knock the toilet off its mounting. The pipes spew. Within seconds, the floor of the cell is flooded. Interior cell block, outside door. A moment later, Rafi kills the arc welder and stands back. Who's Rafe?
Oh, okay, boss, that ought to do it.
They give the door a shove. It swings inward, and gallons of water come gushing out. Little Bigger steps back in disgust.
What the?
Rafe and Carlos gape into the cell. They see the broken toilet, but there's no trace of Rorschach.
Rorschach Company's calling!
Where's the fucking run?
Carlos advances cautiously toward the cell, the cleaver in his fist. Interior cell that moment. In answer to Rafi's question, Rorschach is hiding behind the door. He slams it shut on Carlos's outstretched hand. The red-hot metal of the lock catches Carlos's wrist. He shrieks and drops the cleaver, giving Rorschach just enough time to snatch it up. He jumps, monkey-like, and stands poised on his bunk as the door swings wide and an enraged Carlos charges in, clutching his scorched forearm.
You're mine now, you little—
From the bunk, Rorschach flings the cleaver. It strikes the floor between Rafi and Carlos, neatly severing the power cord of the arc welder, which is sitting in an inch of standing water. Rafi and Carlos do a herky-jerky dance as 20,000 volts course through their bodies and pitch face down into the water. All lights in the cell block dim and die. Little Bigger backs off in gibbering horror as Rorschach climbs down off his bunk, emerges from the cell, and calmly steps over the bodies of the dead.
Your move, right?
The midget kingpin lets out a scream and tears off down the corridor as fast as his stubby little legs will carry him. Interior prison corridor, a moment later. Dreeberg and Lori move down a dark, abandoned corridor, trying to get their bearings.
Where are we? What happened to the lights?
Generators will kick in a minute. We should be close to solitary. Their heads turn toward the end of the passage, where a second corridor crosses the one they're standing in. As they watch, a screaming midget sprints past and disappears. Dreeberg and Lori blink in disbelief. Huh? A moment later, a familiar figure with bright red hair strides past. Rorschach? Rorschach pauses. He stares at his costumed colleagues for a second and a half, then keeps on walking. Interior, prison, cross corridor, a moment later. The terrified Little Bigger realizes he's just hit a dead end. He throws a glance over his shoulder, sees Rorschach moving up on him. Desperate, he ducks into a men's room. Rorschach follows, his pace measured and deliberate. Behind him, Lori and Dreeberg have just rounded the corner into the cross corridor.
Rorschach, is that you?
He turns and holds up a finger. One moment, please. Then, calm and dispassionate, he enters the men's room. Dreeberg and Lori stand at the end of the corridor, mildly boggled.
What's he doing?
I think he's going to the John.
My God, we bust him out of jail in the middle of a riot, and he stops to take a—
Before she can finish, Rorschach reemerges, wiping his hands on a paper towel. He wanders up to join them without so much as a howdy. That was quick.
Toilet clogged. Short, fat turd. Let's get out of here.
Fade out.
I don't know, that seemed like a good place, right? Ah, sorry. I had you guys muted. I said, I don't know, that seems like a good place, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good place.
So, Jeff.
Yes.
You're the Watchmen aficionado here. What are you thinking so far?
You're going to get me fucking roasted. Once again, this is— My thoughts haven't really changed too much. This is Watchmen light. This is, you know, all the nuance gone. I kind of think they wasted a little bit of time with that whole airship chase scene. I feel like that was something they thought they had to put in there, but you've got this huge cast of characters. Why would you waste it not showing any of them? Like, instead showing a bunch of CG fucking planes.
No, not CG. These would be miniatures.
Miniatures, yeah, that's true, 89. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know why you would waste time doing that. This scene really didn't set— I didn't really feel like Little Bigger was a factor. It just— there was nothing built up. I didn't care.
Yeah.
He didn't even do the tall order thing, which was my favorite part that he said.
If it makes you feel any better about the dog chase, for half the time, he had the clouds on so you couldn't even see the ship.
Right. So it wouldn't have been interesting to look at. Not only do you have a cast of, like, I don't know, like 6 to 8 pretty good characters you can be following. Yeah, we're just going to stare at this airship that's also camouflaged for like a 5 to 6 minute chase scene. But yeah, no, other than that, it's Baby's first adaptation. It's just whatever the shortest route he could take that didn't make you think too much.
Yeah, you almost wish he just took the concepts and went in a completely different direction.
Yeah, at least make it either, if you're not going to take it one for one, don't take like the skim off the top and just be like, yeah, this is what The Watchmen is. It's a comic book movie. Nah, just either do something fucking different or do it one for one.
What do you think, Josh?
I think I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the film. I recently reread the book, and
yay.
I didn't remember 80% of the book. Oh. So like it's been a minute. So since I read the book, after our first episode, I reread the book, and now that we're here, it doesn't feel that light to me. It feels, a lot of it is kind of like a facsimile. It feels like a little bit of a facsimile, but it loses the magic a little bit in between the book and like a script. So I think if they were to put this to film, it might turn out pretty good, but it would depend on how they did it.
So it's almost like when you see a painting that one of Da Vinci's students did that's the same as one of Da Vinci's paintings, and you're like, I can see that it's the same thing, but it just is missing that thing.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a good reading it, we're not really shitting on it too much. It definitely wouldn't have been on like a top 10 worst superhero movies
made. Yeah.
Like it wouldn't break that. It'd just be like a really cool version, and then we might not have gotten Zack Snyder's version of it. So it might have just been stuck in 1989 and not introduced new people to it.
If you attach this script to a really awesome team, a great director, producer, get some good actors.
Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
That's who was going to direct it.
Yeah.
Because you could take out, because a good director would see it as a character drama. If they read the book along with this, they'd be like, okay, yeah, so.
Not about take comic out book characters. Bullshit. Like, yeah.
But they need to be like, okay with like fucking with something in 1989 that hadn't really been done a lot, but like fucking with how time works in a movie. Like the Dr. Manhattan stuff is that's super hard for someone without vision to be like, all right, how do I show someone seeing past, present, future all at one time, and how do I like make that overwhelming to a human?
The other thing is that Watchmen is such a like perversion of the entire superhero genre that it doesn't work unless you're familiar with the superhero genre. Like, this shouldn't be what introduces anyone to comics, because you don't know the tropes at that point.
Yeah,
right.
And so this movie in 1989, the world wasn't ready for it. It wouldn't have landed, even if he were making that sort of new take on superheroes that the script is sorely missing, honestly.
Yeah.
That was in the book. Because all we had at that point was some Superman movies that were so far in the past that nobody was thinking about them anymore, and one Batman movie. That's really all he had to go on. But, you know, by the time Zack Snyder's Watchmen came out, we had plenty of superhero movies, and we were steeped in that whole thing. So you could turn it on its head.
Because, you know, a large part of the book is that showing that the reason these people did it, there was, you know, the Minutemen, like when they're talking about under the red or under the hood, like he was even doing it just because he liked to work out and he liked to punch people. Like, and then half of them were in it for fame. They wanted publicity. Then others were in it for a fetish. Like nobody was actually doing it for good reasons. They were all being a hero for selfish reasons, and that's what it tried to highlight.
Yeah, so. Because good people join the police force.
Right. Like, you want to be a good guy, be a fucking cop, right?
Or the army or something, you know. You don't
firefighter or an EMT.
Yeah. You don't have to dress in skin tight latex and go out and punch people in back alleys. And you're like, I'm doing the world so much good.
Which is what I love about Batman.
He definitely plays by the rules.
Because, I mean, he's got billions of dollars in which he can actually change society. And instead, he's like, I'm going to punch this city better.
And that's what, and you're absolutely right. Nobody was looking at it in the mainstream in 1989. No one looked at Batman on the screen and was like, that's a man with mental issues. Like, yeah. that's a 6'5" man in a latex bat suit running around punching clowns. We need to get this guy some help.
They definitely were not saying that about Michael Keaton. So, Josh, promote yourself.
You can check me out, joshuajbaker.com. I've been doing a lot of film work prior to the coronavirus. After that, I've been doing some real estate work and a little bit of product work. You can reach out to me at Josh, J-O-S-H, at joshuajbaker.com. Holl at me.
And for all your Table Reads needs, do hit tablereadspodcast.com. We also have a link tree, which is linktr.ee/tablereads. And hey, I have a new podcast that sadly doesn't have these guys, but it is about the new CW DC Universe TV show Stargirl. It is the most informative deep dive of the Stargirl show that you can imagine, if that's your thing. So check that out, stargirlaftershow.com. That's going to be it for us today. We will see you next week with maybe the conclusion, do you think? Yeah, absolutely the conclusion. We got 23 pages left.
Yeah, we got this.
Oh, yeah, that's one more episode for sure.
Yeah, so next week we will wrap up The Watchmen. And until then, we will miss you.
Oh, it's a boy.
This podcast was created by Sean McBee. For more, visit TableReadsPodcast.com. Cut to black.